Welcome to Already Perfect, the Seattle Soto Zen podcast. And I needed a push to get me to see wherever I am, I'm already
free. Nice to see you all today. So, since I finished my series of talks on Master Dogen's Bendawa, and if you remember that, it took me like 2 months and I didn't even make it to the Q&A. So since then, I have been following through on my commitment, or threat, as however you may see it, to spend this year lecturing on Master Dogen's writings. And so the past few Sunday talks, I've been giving kind of one-off lectures on some of the shorter essays in Dogen Shobogenzo. And I feel like those talks were a little bit heavy for the past few weeks. And I'm not apologizing, because I think, you know, it is important and necessary to think about and talk about things like death and grief and loss. I mean, if we're gonna ever learn to think about and talk about it, you know, right now might be the time with the pandemic and 2 mass shootings within 1 week. But this Sunday's lecture is going to be different, because instead I want to talk about one of my favorite essays from Master Dogen Shobogenzo, which is One Bright Pearl. So when I was training as an interfaith chaplain, the instructor said, you know, whatever, if you have to give a benediction, you know, wherever you are, whatever faith that people are in, if it's Judeo-Christian or, you know, Eastern, or even, you know, secular spirituality, you can always talk about light. That is universally understood. So I, you know, was taking notes and, all right, okay. And then, of course, my first assignment as an interfaith chaplain was to teach meditation at a school for the blind. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably still good advice, but it was kind of like, well, isn't that just typical? So, you know, when Zen teachers get together, we like to, you know, sort of complain about how come these secular forms of meditation are so much more popular, get so many more adherence and more money and attention. And I think there's, you know, a very easy answer to why. Because if you look at Buddhist meditation, you start with the Buddha. And the Buddha started off his teaching career by saying, life is suffering. So, you know, maybe he wasn't a great PR guy. And then you get to Zen, right? You think things can't get any more dour and austere after, well, life is nothing but suffering. But then you get Zen. And I don't know, sometimes I think I'm sort of play up this aspect of Zen Buddhist teaching, maybe just to prove to all of you that I'm not trying to sell you anything, so that, you know, when your knees hurt, you can't complain that I didn't warn you. And I think also because it's kind of funny in a you had to be there kind of funny. But, you know, every once in a while, a few times a year, I realize, wow, it's been a while since I said anything about joy and fulfillment that comes of practice. Yeah. I should probably remind people about that once in a while. So this is what I'm doing this Sunday. The year before I ordained as a Zen priest, I had a real struggle with it. I was kind of having a hard time deciding whether I should go through with it or not. And all of the resident teachers at the monastery and everyone else at the monastery that I interacted with got really heartily sick of hearing me rattle on about it. But then the Tassajara summer season started, which was amazing because we got a bunch of guest teachers who I hadn't winced at yet. So I signed up to see as many of those as would talk to me so that I could share this struggle with them. And I was very fortunate that Benedictine monk and teacher, Brother David Standelrust, was one of the teachers who agreed to listen to me go on. And so, you know, I said, I don't know if I really should ordain as a priest or not. You know, my teacher thinks I'm ready, but I don't know how can I tell if it really is a good idea. And Brother Dave, he was, I think he was 88 at the time. And I could tell that he'd been asked this question before in his many years as a monk and teacher. And so I said, you know, how can I tell if it's a good idea? And he patted me on the shoulder and he said, well, you know, not everyone gets a burning bush. And then he was quiet for a minute and he said, you know, but I think you should be a priest. I think it's a good idea for you. He said, the reason you have doubts is because when you think about being a priest, you imagine yourself sitting in front of a room of people and giving a public lecture. And I say, well, I am never going to do that. That's like a fate worse than death. And he patted me on the shoulder again. And then he said, but that's not really what it's about. I think you should be a priest because I believe that you understand joy. And that is the really important teaching. And I don't mean happiness, but joy. I'm not sure if there really is a difference in the, you know, English language definition of the two terms, but in Brother David's teaching, happiness is a feeling of, you know, ease and contentment that comes from external sources, and joy is internal, an internal state that isn't reliant on the environment. So the koan we're discussing today, topic of Dogen's essay One Bright Pearl is a koan about this joy. So in the great Song dynasty of this samsaric world, at Xuanshao Monastery in Fuzhou, lived the great master Zhang Yi, whose Dharma name was Teacher Replete and whose family name was Xu. While still in this secular world, he enjoyed fishing. He used to go out on his boat on the Nantai River, where he learned from all kinds of fishermen. It was here, without expectation, that he caught the legendary golden carp. The golden carp isn't a real fish. It's a metaphor. So it means, kind of awakening, or the desire for awakening. And it can also be, refer to a good student. So when a teacher is looking for their successor, if they find a very promising monk, they can say, "Ah, I think I've landed the golden fish, the golden carp." So in this case, he was just living his life, and all of a sudden he had this awakening to some truth of life and death. And after this, he couldn't really be content with life as a fisherman anymore. So it was here, without expectation, that he caught the golden carp that comes up by itself. At the beginning of the Shantong period of the Tang, he suddenly decided to renounce the world. He sold his boat and entered the monastery. At this time, he was 30 years old. Fully realizing the pitfalls of the floating world, and coming to know the great value of the Buddha way, he went directly to Shuifeng Monastery to become a disciple of Shunjiao, where he strove for the way morning and night. One day, with the intent of calling on various teachers, he packed his bags and descended from the mountain. Just then, he banged his toe severely on a rock. Bleeding and in great pain, he reflected deeply within himself, saying, "This body does not exist. Where is this pain coming from?" So he turned around and returned to Shuifeng. Shuifeng asked him, "Who is this monk?" Shuifeng was giving him a hard time. He was saying, "Oh, you've been gone so long, I hardly recognize you. Why are you back so soon?" And Shunsha said, "Well, I dare not deceive others after all." Shuifeng really liked this answer, and he said, "Well, anyone could have said this, and yet who could have said this?" Shuifeng again asked, "Why didn't you go and visit other teachers?" The teacher said, "Bodhidharma did not come to China. The second patriarch didn't go to India." Shuifeng was very impressed. Even though he was a fisherman, who normally could not have even dreamt of reading the various scriptures and philosophy, because of the depth of his overwhelming sincerity, Xuanzha was able to muster a measure of determination that far surpassed his fellow students. Shuifeng also regarded him as the most outstanding among his disciples. He never sought for instruction outside of Shuifeng. However, he completely mastered his teacher's dharma, and as such, he was able to succeed him. So I really like this story. Basically, Xuanzha left the monastery believing he had a pretty good understanding of emptiness. But then he stubbed his toe and he realized, "Oh, I didn't really understand emptiness at all." It's like that saying in boxing that, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. So he was like, "You know, I think I have an understanding of existence and non-existence and non-duality." And then he stubbed his toe and he's like, "Oh, well, this does not feel like non-duality." So he went back to his teacher. And Shuifeng said, "So what happened to you, this grand adventure? And Xuanzha said, my problem is that I cannot be fooled. It's, Charles Muller translated as, I dare not deceive others after all. So he was saying, actually, the kind of studying I was planning on doing isn't what I need. What I really need to do is to really examine my own experience. I need to really study what it is like to be a human being with a human body and a human mind. And, you know, traveling around the country listening to different Dharma talks isn't going to help me. So it's kind of like Brother David saying, joy is the happiness that doesn't depend on what happens to us. So he was looking for an understanding of Buddhism that includes stubbing your toe and getting punched in the face, right? He's like, well, if it doesn't explain stubbing my toe, then what use is it? So this was what really set him on his spiritual path. Said, why, you know, so Sui Feng said, why are you back so soon? He said, well, I realized I can't be fooled. And then his second answer doesn't actually really make any sense. He said, Bodhidharma didn't go to China, Huayke didn't go to India. But Bodhidharma actually did go to China. That's kind of his thing. There's like 1,000 koans about it. And his successor, the second ancestor, Huayke, he really did not go to India. So I have no idea what that answer was supposed to say, but Shui Feng liked it, and he was obviously smarter than I am. So that was the backstory to this koan. So here's the actual koan. After Xuanzha finally attained the way, he taught people saying, the whole universe in the 10 directions is one bright pearl. One time a monk came to him and said, teacher, I have heard you say the entire universe in the 10 directions is one bright pearl. How can I understand this? The master said, well, the universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. What is the purpose of understanding it? How can I understand it? The master said, well, what is the purpose of understanding it? The next day, the master went up to this monk and said, the universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. What understanding have you produced? The monk said, the entire universe in the 10 directions is one bright pearl. What is the purpose of understanding it? The master said, you know, you are living in a devil's cave in the Black Mountain. In case it's not clear from the context, living in a devil's cave in a Black Mountain is not a good thing. So, after Xuanzha attained the way, he taught people saying, the whole universe in the 10 directions is one bright pearl. One time a monk came to him and said, what do you mean when you say the entire universe in the 10 directions is one bright pearl? And the master said, well, the universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. What is the purpose of understanding it? And then he tested the monk the next day. He said, what is the understanding you have now of the phrase, the whole universe is one bright pearl? And the monk said, well, the whole universe is one bright pearl. What is the purpose of understanding it? Just repeating what Xuanzha had said to him the other day. And Xuanzha said, Oh dear. Oh no, you're in trouble. So this koan, it's another story about direct experience. So, you know, Xuanzha said, in all directions, the universe is nothing but one bright pearl. And the monk asked him to explain, and he said, well, one bright pearl is, it's an observation, it's not an argument. You know, it'd be like, if you came to me and said, Allison, prove to me that your robe is black. I'd be like, well, look at it. It's black. It's another kind of funny story. Maybe a koan. Probably not a koan. Probably didn't even really happen, but it's one of my favorite stories about one of my favorite philosophers. And about Wittgenstein. And one day Wittgenstein asked a friend, tell me, why do people always say that it was natural for human beings to assume that the sun went around the earth rather than that the earth was rotating? And his friend replied, well, obviously, Wittgenstein, you dummy, obviously it's because it looks like the sun is going around the earth. Wittgenstein said, oh, okay. But what would it have looked like if it had looked like the earth was rotating? So kind of like, he probably would have gotten along with Xuanzha, right? It's like, well, that has to be what it looks like because that's what's happening. I read an article about optical illusions. So there's some really famous illusions that use forced perspective. So it looks like this one figure is larger than the other when they're really the same size. And actually very stable illusions, because even if you take a ruler out and you demonstrate, yeah, they really are the same size, I can measure them and show them to you. After you do that and you look at it again, it's like, yeah, well, but that one still looks bigger. But this study had one extra step, which was the experimenter said, okay, well, now can you reach down as if you were going to pick up that one figure off the paper. And the experimental subjects would do that. And it turned out, even though they said, yes, I perceive one is larger than the other, no matter how many times you tell me that they're the same size, they still look like they're different sizes. Regardless of that, when they reached to pick it up, they held their fingers the same distance apart in either case. So this is about, you know, kind of how visual perception occurs in the brain. It feels like it's all happening at once and we're seeing a complete image of something that's really there, but it's actually distributed throughout the brain in different Our different parts of us, of our brain, process different parts of images differently. For this talk, this is kind of like a metaphor, right? So even though I'm completely fooled and I know and I believe that I'm fooled, there's still something that isn't fooled, right? Even though I really hate myself, there's still some quiet part of me that always knows that I'm Buddha. And even if the world is crap, and I hate everything, in the world, as well as hating myself. Still, the entire universe in all directions is one bright pearl. So in a 1965 lecture at City Center, Suzuki Roshi said that this brightness means essential mind or Buddha mind. Zen Master Dogen said, Buddha light does not mean blue, yellow, red, or white light. It means the great original light in which plants, trees, and land are perpetually shining. This essential mind cannot be recognized by our five senses or mental faculties. However, all our thoughts and sensations are based on this original vitality. It is because of this vital request, before any empirical thinking, that our mental and physical faculties serve their purpose, just as birds know when and where to fly. Because of this innermost request, we know what is good and what is bad, just like a fish knows where to lay its tremendous eggs without knowing why. We want to know when this cosmic world started. But even if we knew the answer to this mystery, we do not know in the same way the answer to why we want to know. Even if we knew the answer to how the world started, we still couldn't understand why we want to know. The mystery of why we pursue the truth in the spiritual world and physical pleasure in the material world should be understood as the vital request of our true nature. Our spiritual and physical pursuit of life is always carried on in the realm of duality, and this is the ultimate cause of our suffering in this world. This cause of suffering appears to be dualistic only in the empirical world. But in reality, in Zen practice, beyond intellectual formulation, there is no duality. This freedom does not come from outside, nor is it the result of practice. In fact, practice is meaningful and joyous because of this freedom. Practice vitalized by our inmost request is self-joyous practice. This practice covers everyday dualistic life. Duality should be realized as oneness, and oneness should be manifested as duality. The joyous, continuous effort to realize the oneness of duality is the way to obtain vital religious freedom. Only when we find ourselves actualizing this freedom by practice do we find the incessant shedding forth of Buddha light in our life. This light should not be sought in the visible objective world in a dualistic way. It is necessary to actualize this light in your everyday life by your perpetual effort. The mystery of why we pursue truth in the spiritual world or physical pleasure in the material world should be understood as a vital request of our true nature. Our spiritual and physical pursuit of life is always carried out in the realm of duality, and this is why we suffer in this world. This cause of suffering appears to be dualistic only in the empirical world. But in reality, in Zen practice, there is no duality. This freedom does not come from outside, nor is it the result of practice. In fact, practice is meaningful and joyous because of this freedom. Practice vitalized by our inmost request is self-joyous practice. The joyous, continuous effort to realize the oneness of duality is the way to obtain vital religious freedom. only when we find ourselves actualizing this freedom through practice do we find the incessant shedding forth of Buddha light in our life. It is necessary to actualize this light in your everyday life through ongoing effort. And Dogen's commentary on the koan, One Bright Pearl, he says, as for the phrase, One Bright Pearl, even though it has never been named up until now, it has been experienced. And this phrase is the application of language to it. One bright pearl means this moment is an eternity. It is arrival in the present and the circumstance of not having been reached through eternity. However, this being the case, the suchness and beginninglessness of this bright pearl is endless. The whole universe in the 10 directions is one bright pearl. Don't say two pearls or three pearls. The entire human body is this one single true eye of Dharma. The true human body is this essence of reality. The whole body is this single phrase. The whole body is this luminosity. The whole body is this whole mind. At the time of the wholeness of the human body, the whole body is without obstruction. Because the merits of the one bright pearl are visibly manifest like this, there are presently Avalokiteshvara and Maitreya, who see form and hear sound. And there are ancient Buddhas and recent Buddhas who appear in the world to teach the Dharma. Jack Kornfield tells a story about a recent interview with Gary Snyder, the famous beatnik Zen poet and trailblazing environmentalist. And in this interview, he was asked, as we're facing climate change, mass extinction, habitat loss, the melting of the polar ice, they said, what advice do you have for, young environmental activists? You got an early start in the 50s before it was cool. So based on all of your experience, what can you tell us now about facing all of these problems? And according to Jack Kornfield, Gary Snyder's response was, well, don't feel guilty. So guilt, anger, and fear are a part of the problem. If you want to save the world, save it because you love it. Don't act from a place of guilt, anger, or anxiety. If you want to save something, save it because you love it. The lovely Japanese monk Ryokan said, nothing makes me happier than my vow to save all beings. Nothing makes me happier than the vow to save all beings. I want to save all beings because they're beautiful and because I love them. And because I love them, naturally, I want to save them. I want them to experience this joy and wholeness, this experience of one bright pearl. I want that for everyone. And because this is so important for me, because this arises naturally from my love of all living beings, this work is is joyful. It makes me happy. Vowing to save all beings makes me happy like nothing else can. So Dogen continues in his commentary on One Bright Pearl. He says, this being so, although you might say, I am not a bright pearl, still you should not doubt it. Whether you doubt it or not, this doubt comes from a limited view. Really, we can have faith in Xunsa saying, I am a bright pearl. To think or not think 100 times about what the bright pearl is or is not is just tying yourself up in knots. When you clarify the body and the mind as a bright pearl, through the true words of Master Xuanzha, you understand that mind is not the self. You know, I can get carried away by my thinking, and I can even convince myself of all my false thoughts. But one bright pearl is a reality that's as honest and immediate as stubbing your toe. It doesn't matter what I think or I believe. When I stub my toe, it hurts. In the same way, I can have faith that the body and mind are one bright pearl. Who is concerned whether or not appearing and disappearing are the bright pearl? Even if you are concerned, that does not mean that you are not the bright pearl. It's not something outside of this one bright pearl that causes practice and thought. Therefore, walking forward, walking backward, every step you walk within the demon's cave on the Black Mountain is one bright pearl. So joy, which Brother David defines as the happiness that doesn't depend on what happens to us, it's available to everyone all the time, all of us. And, you know, even if it's actually true that I really am a horrible person and I don't deserve to be happy, even if that's true, there's actually really no benefit to me or to anyone else for me to go on making myself miserable. So, you know, there just isn't any point to doing it. So I can just stop. Can just stop creating this misery that comes from these false thoughts that I keep reminding myself are true, even though I know they're really not true. And even better news is that I'm really not a horrible person who doesn't ever deserve to be happy. That's not true, because I really am the bright pearl. So if any of you listening feel that you need permission to love yourself, to let go of some guilt that you've been carrying for a long time, to feel joy even in the midst of a messed up, suffering world. You know, this permission has been granted. Xuanzha has already said, yes, the gate of liberation stands open. You don't have to do anything special. It's already open. Whether walking forward or backward, even if you're walking around in a demon's cave on the Black Mountain, Still, the gate of liberation stands open, and you can step through. You are stepping through, even in the midst of this confusion and doubt. Because this freedom does not come from outside, nor is it the result of practice. In fact, practice is meaningful and joyful because of this freedom. Practice vitalized by our inmost request is self-joyous practice. Thank you very much.
And I needed a push to get me to see wherever I am, I'm already free.
Thank you for listening. Please find us at seattlesotozen.org. Our theme music is by Stuart Davis. Gosho!